The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. We welcome you. We're excited to have a good one. I was going to have Mary Beth Franklin on, which is the former editor of Kiplinger Magazine and then the current contributing editor of Investment News. She is on a cruise, or was on a cruise in Europe, and just didn't get back to the States with delays and things like that to be on the show this week. So we're trying to get a reschedule. We're not exactly sure when that will be, but hopefully it will be very, very soon. I'm getting texts from people as I'm on the show. So we're going to have a good one today. We're going to talk with Eric Geisler here in just a few minutes about the Fed announcement this week on their plan to move interest rates up, and not so much what they did, but what they said and what we think will happen going forward. And later on, guard it, grow it, and go get it. Are you worried about losses in your 401k or other retirement accounts right before you retire? We're going to go over a few ideas that might help. And then Rod will be calling in later on to talk about the overall economy as well and where he sees opportunities in the market right now. So from small caps to mid caps to large caps and more. And then later on, questions of the week. Let's do a little news of the week brought to you by the upcoming Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame Banquet, brought to you by us at Comprehensive Financial Consultants. To learn more about Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame or to get a table for the upcoming, or just a ticket for the upcoming banquet to induct the new class for 2018, go to mcshof.com. All right. What do they know anyway? The S&P 500 is up 4.9% year-to-date through last Friday, but only 39% of stock investors are currently bullish on U.S. equities for the upcoming 6 months. I don't see that. When I see folks coming in my office, they seem pretty optimistic over the next 6 months. Only 19% of investors were bullish on U.S. stocks just 5 days before the bull market began back in March of 2009 that has now lasted for over 111 months. This comes from By the Numbers. The Fed tightening cycle. The Fed has raised short-term interest rates now 7 times since December of 15 over the past 30 or so months, an increase of 1.75%. Over that 2.5 years, the S&P has gained more than 41%, an average of 14.9% total return. Of course, the market has shaken off every rate increase so far. Can't do it alone, folks. 22% of Americans at least age 85 need a little help with personal care daily things that come up in their life. The number of Americans at least age 85 is projected to more than double, from 6.4 million in 2016 all the way to 14.6 million in 2040. This comes from the Administration for Community Living. Not so golden. I talk about and joke about taxes and where taxes used to be, and I've heard use the analogy that Ronald Reagan, you know, made a couple $100,000, which put him in the 94% tax bracket, and then he wouldn't make a third movie because if he made a third movie, he'd only keep 6 cents of every dollar that he made. And that, heck, he lived in California, so he probably made a lot less than that or had to pay them to make the movie. Well, I saw this from also By the Numbers. Actually, it came from the Bay Area Council poll, and I visited San Francisco not long ago, but it comes from By the Numbers, and it says, not so golden. 46% of San Francisco Bay Area residents surveyed plan to move out of California within the next few years, primarily due to the cost of housing, traffic, and taxes. And then finally, are you tired of getting all of these prospectuses and big documents from your retirement plan? Well, if H.R. 4610 passes, that's Receiving Electronic Statements to Improve Retirees' Earnings Act. That means the more, people say this all the time, they wouldn't send me all this stuff, I could make more of my investments. Well, that's obviously a little bit true. So if this passes, it would eliminate the 1974 ERISA requirement to deliver hard copy retirement plan documents to participants. That comes from the House of Representatives. And I know those administrators out there, those HR people who have boxes of these plan documents in their floor and they have to hand them out to the participants, are hoping and praying this goes through. All right, folks, let's take a break. When we come back, the Fed announced this week their plans to move rates up. We're going to have Eric Giesler on in just a few minutes, our fixed income manager at CFCI, to talk about the changes and what's to come and what it really means. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. You know, I was reading a Wall Street Journal article this week, I'm sure Eric read it as well, on how low can U.S. unemployment rates safely go. Only twice in the past half century has the unemployment rate fallen to its current rate of 3.8%. For a few years in the late 1960s, I'm assuming that's because of the draft and pulling kids out of the workforce or young adults. And for 1 month in 2000, the 60s episode obviously spurred years of soaring inflation that would take almost like a decade for policymakers to corral in. And then obviously around 2000, that coincided with the tech bubble bursting, causing the 2001 recession. So the Fed obviously announced on Wednesday they're raising rates again. But how fast and how high rates will rise, that's the question. I mean, the Fed's new leader, who is not an economist, by the by, yeah, it's the first one in 30 years that isn't an economist. I'm kind of glad about that. Has a lot on their plate. And Eric, you're with us now to kind of help explain all of this. I think when the Fed moves their interest rate, no one was surprised about that. We're always anxious to hear what they say, because what they did doesn't necessarily matter, but what they say seems to matter more than anything else. And they have a big challenge in front of them, don't they?
Yes, they do. And it's curious that you kind of led with the unemployment, because in this most recent report here this week, they talked about their target, or what they believe that employment is going to be for 2019 and 2020. They're actually suggesting that it's going to be 3.5%. So even lower from where we are today. But I think the highlight is that when you look at it, they look like the and they changed the wording and said that the economy is expanding, and they used at a strong pace. In previous announcements, they had used the word moderate pace. And so I believe that they think the economy is heating up, that there are inflation pressures. If you want to talk about the cost of goods and what have you, they're believing that those costs are going up. If you take away autos, it was up about 0.8 last month. So I, as you pointed out, and I think as the market has known all along, they were going to raise rates. They continue to talk about doing two more this year. I have an opinion about why I think they're going to do two more, but they're right now, that fourth one is about a 50-50, bet right now, whether they do the fourth one. But I think they're going to continue to raise rates. Because if there is difficulty in the economy in the future, that allows them actually a little more room to back off those rates and maybe help the economy if it does start to slow down a little bit.
I'll be kind of curious to see if, as wages increase, if that pulls other people into the workforce that's simply sitting on the sidelines. We've seen this a few times with some of our existing clients who retired in their maybe late 50s, early 60s, but have been yanked back in because of the lucrative market that they can jump into. I met with someone this week that's getting paid like $1,000 a week for working 2 days doing some consulting on some machine work. I was meeting with a guy today that runs a company that relies on truck drivers, and he's having a hard time, you know, finding people to drive trucks. So he's doing all kinds of creative things to find people. And I found it interesting that he said to me, you know what, I've got guys that have high school diplomas or not high school diplomas that are making $60,000 to $100,000 a year just by driving my trucks. And I'm thinking that eventually that wages might get high enough
that it could pull people like my wife in. Maybe Lori might get pulled back in the workforce. I was talking to Wayne Thacker at the office today. He says he sure hopes his wife gets pulled back into the workforce, you know, based on higher wages. And if that happens, that might keep a lid on inflation, because obviously you pay people more, the cost of goods go up, pay people more. It's just kind of the cycling thing, and that's what the Fed's trying to tap their brakes on.
Well, and I think that kind of takes us to another point. Why aren't interest rates going up, or at least long-term interest rates going up right now? And I think what is unique is the U.S. economy is probably one of the few places that is growing at a fast pace. If you look around the world, we still have negative rates. We still have a lot of accommodative policies from their central banks. And so I think that if you look around the world, we're probably that one bright spot that does have an economy that's growing, and therefore our dollar and our debt continue to look attractive relative to the rest of the world. And I think that's why you haven't. I think that's a more likely scenario than we're having a flattening curve that would lead to recessionary policies and economics here in the United States. I think it is that sole fact is that our economy is the only economy in the world that's really going gangbusters, and therefore the demand for our assets continues to grow. And I thought this week last week was a great example that, you know, we've increased the amount of debt that we're auctioning off, and yet the demand for that exceeds the supply, and so it just keeps a cap on those long-term yields.
Two things. One, it seems like every time in my near almost 25-year career, and your career much longer than that, every time the yield curve flattens or goes inverted, it seems like people come up with reasons why this time it's different, and this time it's not going to cause a recession. And I'm kind of hearing that again now from what you just said.
Well, I'm not of the opinion that it's not going to happen, because I think if you look at the consensus out there from the world is that our economy is probably going to slow down. I think the consensus is somewhere around late 2019, some 2020-ish. Is that likelihood greater now than ever before? Maybe. But I think that the Fed is going to pay attention to that. And I don't think it's being caused by a slowdown right now, which is generally what it's indicative of, is the economy slowing down. We're not slowing down right now, but we do have higher rates, and there is a cost to that. And you look at the amount of debt that is being carried here in the United States, whether it's by individuals or corporately. It's enormous, and mm-hmm. so higher rates will have an effect on that.
Right, and that's what would cause the slowdown. Now,
exactly.
We've been trying to, and Rod and I did this a couple weeks ago, talk about what a real recession looks like. And I think for most of us, you know, around here, the most recent recession is the one you think is like all recessions, and it's not. The last recession was terrible. It was the Great Recession. You know, 1970s, we had some pretty rotten times as well. But most recessions aren't that long. They don't dig that deep, and we tend to recover fairly fast. And the stock market will go down maybe for a year, maybe for 2 years, maybe for just 3 or 4 months. So this is a healthy thing that we would you know, goose the economy. We would slow it down, retract a little bit possibly. Market might go down. But I had a talk with one of our clients today, Eric, and he said, you know, I keep hearing you guys talk about possible recession coming. What are you going to do about this? What are we going to do about this? And I said, actually, you know, you're positioned for kind of an all-weather type of portfolio. We have plenty of money in fixed income that will weather you through your retirement income needs for the next 15 years. And we can't time the fact that when the recession is going to happen, what kind of an effect it's going to have on the market. So we're going to keep invested. Sure, we may take a little extra cash and store it up for, you know, some dry powder opportunities. But Eric, it's hard to really change a whole lot in expectations of what a recession might actually look like.
Well, very few people ever timed the market very well in terms of taking advantage of those markets. It's difficult to do, in anybody's portfolio, whether you're an individual on retirement, whether you're an individual at 30 years old, or whether you're a large corporation trying to manage your money.
Mm-hmm.
Those things are hard. All you can do is be prepared for them and have the right tools in your toolbox to kind of weather the storm.
What are you buying right now? I mean, I know the curve is very, very flat. I know what you're buying because I've talked to you all the time. But for people out there, well, what are you buying right now? What are you seeing?
I think that the best value right now in terms of fixed income still remains in that 5 to 10 year, 7 specifically, point in the curve. And I think that will probably be the pivot point, whether the long rates rise or or whether we have a decline in short-term rates. I just think that's the best value right now. And I think that right now that the highest rating that you can afford and provide you the best risk-return profile, I think that's the best place to be right now from a fixed income perspective. And as you know, you have to look for the stories, right?
Right.
But then new issuance has kind of slowed down. Certainly municipal issuance has slowed down a little bit, but and it's the summer months. We're going into
right.
the summer months. But, the secondary, it's finding that story.
Right, exactly. Well, you demand. So you, and I say you demand, not you create the demand. So, Biggie, we appreciate you taking the time as always, and
yep.
thanks for the great job you do sharing your
thanks
wisdom.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, man. Have a good one.
Right.
Talk to you soon.
Talk to you later.
Okay, bye. Folks, we'll be right back. We're going to talk about guarding it, growing it, and getting it. You know, are you worried about losses in retirement accounts just before you retire now, or just a few years away from retirement? I would be. So we're going to talk about a few ideas that might help and some tools that are available in the market that you need to be aware of. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Hey, I did get a new golf cart this week, just so you know. It hasn't been delivered yet, but so you all know about the one that burnt down. It's on WGCL Facebook page someplace. I think it's going to be out of my yard today. Who knew how heavy a burnt golf cart is? Very, very heavy. Plus, the tires were melted to the ground, which didn't help at all. But I wanted to get one before 4th of July. We're going to have folks over and all that. So I'm looking forward to my new golf cart. And just so you know, they're not cheap. I went and tried to find a good used one, and the new ones are just like 20% more than the used ones. So the only thing that tells me is that the value holds up well, so maybe I won't get hurt too bad on the price when I eventually sell it or burn it up or whatever it is that I do with it. All right, so here we are, right? We're in the market, and things are going great. The 401ks are smoking. My IRAs look good. I'm 61, 62, 65, whatever. It doesn't make any difference. And I'm going to retire in a few years. So my biggest worry is, hey, I've made it to the promised land. I've got what I got. I have enough to do what I want to do. What do I do now? Do I just stay the course, or do I protect some of it? Well, when you have a well thought through retirement income plan, obviously using the now, soon, and later approach, the money I'm going to need now stays in the bank, money I'm going to need soon, meaning the next 10 years or so, that money should be invested in more conservative investments, like Eric mentioned, maybe a nice laddered bond portfolio. But then my later money, money that I won't need for 10, 15 years, that money needs to be stuck in longer-term investments. Well, people understand that. They probably get it. But even if that long-term bucket goes down 10 or 20%, they don't like it. But that's the game you're in. I mean, if you're in the long-term game, then you're going to play the long-term game, and with that comes losses sometimes. So we've had some great gains, of course, over the last several years, but now folks are thinking this way. I want to guard it, I want to grow it, and then I want to be able to get to it. So when you get close to retirement, I mean, you might be worried about these downturns, and it may be time to think about adding some safeguards to your portfolio. I talked to a guy, been a long-term client of mine, and he hit the promised land, and that was his question. And he wasn't too worried about, you know, the next year, but he keeps hearing us talk about recessions and the market going down and, you know, what can I do about that? So we came up with an idea, and we're not going to implement it yet for him, but this has been very, very, a very strong idea for a lot of people. There have been products introduced to the marketplace that allow you to participate in the market but have some downside protection. One came out this week that was really good. But before I get to that, I want to give you a little history lesson. From 1988 through January of 18, if you review and look at all of the rolling 1 and 6 year periods of time on a rolling basis, so basically, literally January to January, February to February, March to March on a 1 year basis, and you look at all the rolling 6 year periods, so January 88, you know, to what would be 1994. Then you would look at 1989 in the 6 years. And I mean, so there's tons of these rolling 6 year periods. When you look at the math behind it, the average return since 1988 on all rolling 1 year periods has been 9.3%. This is on the S&P 500. This comes from Lincoln National. The number of gains has been 278, number of losses 71. The number of times we've had a 10% or less loss, 27 times. The losses between 10 and 20 over a one-year period of time, 21 times. Anytime you've had a loss in 1 year between 20 and 30, rolling 1 year, is 15 times. And you've had a loss of 30 or greater since 1988 on a rolling one-year basis, 8 different times. So times loss occurred 20.3% of the time you've actually had losses. So a lot more wins than losses, and that's a case for staying invested, right? On a six-year basis, 64% rate of return on average, 245 gains, 44 losses. 31% of those losses came, or 31, yeah, of those losses came with a loss of 10% or less. 13 of the 44 were between 10 and 20, and this is over a six-year period of time. But never over that time period from January of 88 through January of 2018 did we ever have losses exceed 20%. So, with that said, some of the products that have been introduced, they will give you up to 125% gain on the S&P 500. So the S&P 500, whatever it gains, you can gain up to 125%. So you have $100,000, you can make up to $125,000 on that, or you'd end up with $225,000 over a six-year period of time. That's a big gain, and unlikely to happen, by the way. But with that, they will say for the first 20% of any loss, we'll absorb, and it doesn't even have a fee associated with it. And I'm telling you this, guys, because these products have been around for about 5 years or so. I've been using them for about four, but lately they're coming out in droves, new companies are introducing them, and it's kind of an arms race, which means that's good for you, the consumer, because these introductory contracts and introductory rates that are coming out are just wowing me. In fact, this one company admitted this is a loss leader for us. We're giving away a lot more than we're ever going to be able to make to try and get market share and get advisors using us. So think about that. Over the next 6 years, if the market goes down 20% or less, I lose nothing. But if it goes up 125%, I get it all. To me, I'm not giving up anything, and I'm getting something, and it doesn't cost me anything. So literally like a fixed investment that doesn't have a fee associated with it. So I have been talking to most of my clients when they come through, most of the people that I see that are worried about this, and I've been talking about this a little bit on the radio, but not a lot. I want to talk to you directly about this, and if you had any questions about these products, I can't be specific on the radio, as you guys know. But if you want to know more details about what it is, how it works, you can do IRA money, 401k money, if you can roll out early, anything, shoot us an email at cfci.us, and we can have an offline, more detailed discussion about what these products are, how they work. The only downside, to, in my opinion, would be that this is a point-to-point contract on the S&P 500, but it does not include dividends. So if it was, I'm just making this up, but if the S&P 500 was 2,000 when you started, and when you ended at the end of 6 years, it was 3,000, that's your gain. You do not get that 2% dividend each year that the S&P spits off. So you do give up that, but you are getting something. So for some people, you know, they like it. They like the protection, and that's why we've coined this idea that you guard it, you grow it, and then you get it, and you can do it in a variety of different ways. So hopefully that's intriguing to you, and if you're in that boat where you're a little bit concerned about where my account's going to go, especially when I'm just a few years out from retirement, this could be something that you could be interested in. So again, email me if you have any questions at all about that, and we can have an offline email discussion or a phone discussion to see if it's suitable for you. All right. Email again, cfci.us. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to have Rod Holloway on. Of course, Rod, he's generally glass half full. Eric's generally glass half empty, but he wasn't that empty today. He was pretty full of energy and enthusiasm, and that's about as much as you get out of Big E. But we're going to have Hot Rod on, and not so much talking about the economy. I think Eric took care of that, but more about where in the market he's seeing opportunities. You know, when you talk about portfolios, I had someone in today right before I did the show, and I said, you know, the portfolio that you're in, where you're at, they basically have checked a box that said you are moderate growth, and that moderate growth meant you own all of these, and they owned about 20 different funds, and they covered every style box from small cap, mid cap, large cap, value, growth, emerging markets, high yield. I mean, it was all over the place, and usually when you're that diversified, you can sometimes diversify yourself out of any meaningful return by having some you know, stinkers in there, and it doesn't take many stinkers to pull your return down. So we have taken on this belief that over-diversification is not the way to go. It's more of a focused diversification. So when we come back, we'll talk to Rod about that and more. This has been Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. A good show today, right? We kind of threw it together at the last minute because Mary Beth Franklin, former senior editor of Kiplinger Magazine and now the contributing editor of Investment News, had to bail on us because of travel glitches. According to a late-night email last night, it looked like that she either had a flight delay or something had occurred, so she was not going to be able to make it back to the greater Baltimore area in time to call in. So we're going to reschedule her, but hey, we always have plenty to talk about, and hopefully you enjoy the last few segments with Eric talking about the Fed and interest rates and where he sees the economy overall, and also how you can guard it, grow it, and get it in our last segment, and how to protect what you already have. So now joining me on the phone is Hot Rod Holloway, the equity portfolio manager of CFCI and the famous radio guy on Glass in the Morning every Monday at 7:20 and Fridays as well. So we'll hear Rod on Friday morning with Glass in the Morning. I'm sure you guys will be talking about the Fed changes, Hot Rod, but we've already covered that for the big show. But I will say this, that the economy seems to be in great shape. I mean, the trade deficits in April coming in nearly $3 billion lower than expected. The First Trust, which is a company that we follow and think is pretty good and smart, say that second quarter GDP could be as high as 5%. I met with them this week, and they said, no, we meant 4.8. Well, I said, okay, whatever. Of course, the labor market continues to tighten. Service sector's expanding, so a lot going on. North Korea talks and summits and nuclear stuff, who knows, everything. But, Rod, I mean, the bottom line is it's pretty green out there. Things are going good in the economy, and the market's been kind of, well, good for quite some time, a little bumpy this year at times. But I want to talk to you about two things. One, you know, as we look at, and I've talked to Eric about this too, but we talked about wages and how wages increasing will cause prices to go up, which caused inflation to go up, which caused the Fed to act. And one thing you and I talked about at the office was, are these higher wages going to pull people back into the wage, into the workforce? And I think it might. You know, if you go and even look at the bus driver situation we had here right at Monroe County Schools, they couldn't find bus drivers. But what did they do? They kept raising the wages until people were like, well, heck yeah, I'll drive a bus for that. And I think we saw a client of ours in this week, and I went back and shared with you that, you know, he was offered $1,000 a week to work 2 days. He's like, well, yeah, I'll do that. So I think there is a point where there's enough money being offered where it's going to pull people back in from the outside. But that doesn't mean we don't have wage pressure, because obviously the only way you got them back in was to increase wages. So I'm not sure that's going to be real helpful or not. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree that there always comes that point and that line that you cross in which increasing the wages does encourage people to make changes in their life, whether that be a change in a job and go to a different job, whether that be re-enter the job-looking sphere. as we know when we talk about unemployment and those numbers, if you're unemployed but you're not looking for a job, guess what? They don't count you as unemployed, regardless of the reason. So you may be frustrated with the availability of opportunities for yourself as to why you gave up. Not that you chose to not work, but you just gave up because there just what didn't appear to be anything for you. So, yeah, those increases in wage can do that. I had a conversation with my dad earlier today in which he ran into an old buddy of mine that I graduated high school with. Similar thing. He's making a new job change, and he still lives in Huntington. He's taking a job in Fort Wayne, which he said he has always avoided because he didn't want to have to make that drive on a daily basis. Dad asked him, well, gosh, what changed then? You know, you're older in life, so you would probably be less likely to want to make that drive. He said, honestly, it's the money.
Mm-hmm.
He has welding experience, so the welders are in need, and there are companies in Fort Wayne that need welders extremely bad, and they finally offered a price that made him say, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and make that 45-minute drive every day to and from work because of the added pay. So what does that do? Boom, it opens up a job in Huntington because he's taking a job in Fort Wayne. So maybe somebody locally that was frustrated and couldn't find a job has some welding experience that now can jump out and say, oh, okay, hey, I'll take this job in Huntington. So, yeah, there is a bit of that domino effect. The other thing along those lines you and I talked about, some of those part-time people or people who don't work and don't necessarily need to work but want to do something with their time.
Right.
Okay. Well, they can look at it and say, okay, I can volunteer for a good cause, or I can do a part-time job and make a little bit of money. Well, if the money's not enough, they go the volunteer route. Eventually, if the money becomes enough, they go, wow, gosh, I've really enjoyed volunteering my time to this wonderful organization, but it's hard to turn down this money when I'm looking for something to do and they're going to pay me this much to do it on a part-time basis.
I need to find out from my wife what that dollar amount is, because when Will gets out of school and moves on, I'm not sure that what's going to happen. But I, you're right. I mean, there might be something out there for a lot of these stay-at-home moms once the kids leave the nest and they're looking to engage. I've seen that. I've seen moms get into real estate. I've seen them get back into some part-time work, and it's because, one, they want to stay engaged, but making good money also is good. Hey, I want to talk to you, because we don't have a ton of time, about the market in general. You know, we tend to focus always on the S&P 500 and the Dow, so which is the big boys, but we haven't really talked about where you're seeing opportunities right now from a capitalization standpoint, small cap, mid cap, large cap, and how active portfolio management differs from passive portfolio management. I know it's a big pill to chew and swallow and talk about, Rod, in just a few minutes, but I think it's interesting whenever you dig down a little bit deeper and say, hey, where's the real opportunity here, and what has been going on in these different markets?
Yeah, exactly. And obviously all things are doing well, but areas that seem to have a little extra juice behind them is in that smaller and mid-cap space. And there are a couple of reasons for that. Number one, typically the smaller and mid-sized company are predominantly domestic in their business. So all these so-called trade skirmish, trade war, call it what you want to call it, don't have a huge impact on them, because guess what? They're not buying nor selling imports and exports. They're dealing domestically. So any increase in that, for the most part, has little to no effect on them.
I mean, they're buying stuff coming from China, right? But, yeah.
Right. There are some raw material things that maybe they use some steel and aluminum that could have an impact. But the broad picture is it has very minimal impact on them. The second thing, and probably the much larger thing, it's the tax cuts. Mm-hmm. You know, when you look, large corporations on average had a real tax rate around 24% to 25% on average. Well, they got cut to 21%. Okay, got 3 or 4% savings. Nice savings, especially for a large corporation. That can be a lot of money. But a lot of the small caps, when you looked at their tax rates, they were more in that 30% to 35% corporate tax bracket. Now they're down at 21%. You know, now you're beginning to talk about 10% to 15%. Decrease in the tax that they're paying, that's real numbers that will have a powerful impact at the end of the year when they go through a full year of having those extra dollars put into the corporate checkbook.
So when we talk about an asset allocation, what it should look like for most people, I mean, everyone's different. I think it goes back to things we've said many, many times before. Know the purpose of your money. Know when it is you're going to need it. when you're going to need to use it. And if it's long-term money, it's long-term money. If it's money you're going to need sooner than later, then it's shorter-term money. So I think on that later account is more – we kind of covered the now or the soon bucket with Eric. He talked about, you know, kind of that 7-year point in the curve is a good spot. But from a longer-term asset allocation model, what are you thinking? What are you saying?
Yeah, and I think, once again, to break it down even a little bit more, in that long-term bucket, then it becomes how long is truly long-term. So let's say you are 10 years away from retirement, roughly. Okay, mm-hmm. Well, maybe then you're looking at maybe some small-cap exposure approaching about 10 to 15%, your mid-cap exposure getting up in that 20 to 25%. So maybe in that total allocation for you, maybe you're 55 to 60% large cap, and then the rest of that being in the small cap, so roughly 40 to 45% in small cap. Now, if your time horizon is much longer, if you are much younger and you've got a 20-year, 30-year time horizon before you need the money, you can most certainly begin to be more aggressive and increase that and get at least to a 50-50, if not tilted a little bit towards the small and mid, especially right now, because as we're talking, we say, hey, there's a little more opportunity in here. So what we would suggest is whatever that allocation, the small and mid caps you feel comfortable with for your long-term time horizon, go ahead and increase that a little bit because there's a little extra opportunity there right now, which also means at some point in time in the future when things level back out and you feel like, okay, equity looks good regardless of cap size, then you want to go back to that weighting, whether it's a 50-50 or you tilted it more towards the small or mid. But I think you can definitely increase at all levels that small cap, but just be aware that, like I said, if you're 10 years away from retirement or needing that long-term bucket, yes, increase small cap, but don't go hog wild to where now all of a sudden small and mid is the dominant factor in there, because you still need a little more stability. And the one thing that we know, the market will make a big change before anybody fully anticipates that big change.
Right. Never go hog wild, folks. That's the lesson of the day from Hot Rod. Rod, we appreciate you and hope we'll see you and hear you on Glass in the Morning on Friday at 7:20 and then again on Monday. So I'll see you bright and early in the morning, man.
That sounds good. Have a great show, and I'll see you tomorrow, Dave.
All right, man. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We are so far behind. We got a lot to cover. Questions of the week next. This is Your Money with David Hayes. All right, friends, welcome back to Your Money with David Hayes. It is Question of the Week time. We have about 4 minutes to get through that before we have to take another break. All right, I have a house that I haven't been able to sell in Bedford. I have a full price offer, but they want me to seller finance for 3 years and then a balloon payment. I have a mortgage on it now. The payment's around $800 plus taxes and insurance. The payment they would make to me is about the same, maybe a little more. And they would pay the tax and the insurance, and they're going to give me a 5% downstroke. What do you think? Well, listen, folks, if they can't borrow from the bank, they probably shouldn't be borrowing from you. Now, that isn't always the case, but I can tell you that I have done this personally 2 or 3 times, and it has worked out, well, never. So if my experiences can help you avoid a bad experience, I'm going to tell you don't do it, because here's what's going to happen. At some point, they may not make payments, and it takes you months to get them out. And while you're getting them out, you're having to make payments on 2 houses, the one you're in now, the one that they're in. When you finally get them out, you walk in, you find out that the toilet's clogged up and running over and tearing up your floors. You have mold. You have dog poop everywhere. I mean, who knows what? It's a mess. And then you have to get this thing all cleaned up, put money in it, and try to sell it again. You're right back to where you started. So, you know what the problem is? When you can't sell a piece of real estate, only one thing, price. That means you have it priced too high. So if you're going to have to lower the price to sell it, and I would probably rather take a little hickey if I have to still, you know, bring money to closing even, than I would try to sell it to someone on contract like that. Just my experience. I might be wrong. It might work out fine for you, but I wouldn't do it. All right, here's a question. When I start pulling money out of my retirement accounts, I don't pay taxes, Social Security tax on that money, right? But I do pay Medicare taxes. So the answer is no. When you start taking money out of retirement accounts, the only thing you pay is federal and state tax. You don't pay Social Security tax on that money. You don't pay Medicare tax, just federal and state. That's it. All right, my wife and I are both 65, plan to retire soon. She'll be 66 and then plans to take Social Security. I want to delay mine to 70. It seemed like a no-brainer when I did the math. What do you think? Well, I met with these folks this week, and all I said was, listen, yes, I think that's a great idea, but what you need to do, because you have fallen in that unique age bracket where you were 64 before January 1 of this year, that you can still file a restricted application. What does that mean? He's going to file and earn, take half, not take, but get half of what his wife is getting, delay his to 70, flip it over, and then he'll have about a $3,300 a month benefit when he's 70. And then when he passes away or she passes away, the highest check is the check that stays in the household. So that's it. Let's see. And is Social Security taxable at the state level? No. All right. That's a quick one. So we have more here, but I can't get it to all of it. So we got to take a break. When we come back, we'll wrap up the big show. This is Your Money with David Hayes. All right. I'm really sorry that this segment, that last segment was so short, because it's one of my favorite segments. We reintroduced questions of the week a few weeks ago, and it's just, you know, it's fun, and it answers questions that real people have. And, you know, if they had this question, then likely someone else has the same question, and it sort of, you know, builds on itself. So if you have a question, and I didn't, you know, I'll pick these up in person or, you know, at a tailgate or in, you know, emails or whatever. You know, it may end up on the show. And if it's a question that I think, huh, wow, what people really think this, then we need to get it out to y'all. So if you have one and you want to shoot it to me in an email, feel free to do so. CFCI.us, CFCI.us. And don't be surprised if I call you on the phone, because usually questions lead to more questions. You know, you ask me a simple question, well, I have a question about your question, and then I can answer your question. You know how that goes. So again, don't be shocked if I just pick up the phone and say, hey, can you talk here in about 5 minutes, and we'll knock this thing out. I really enjoy doing that a lot. So again, that's how you get on the Q&A segment. Hey, we talked about a lot today. We had the Fed announcing interest rate changes. I had Eric to talk about that and what that all means, and I went through a guard it, grow it, and get it. You know, if you're worried about declines in the market before you retire, we gave you some helpful tips on what you can do. And then, of course, we had Hot Rod, who was on talking about the different asset allocations that he sees doing well, both on a short and long-term basis. So if you missed any of it, you can catch the show on Saturday morning at 9 a.m. here on the station or over on WGCLradio.com and also on iTunes and Google Play Music. And I'm going to change the picture on the iTunes because it is bad. Someone pulled it up today, and I thought, oh, I forgot how bad it was. Wayne Thacker just took it here in the off air in the studio. Hair's all messed up. My shirt's half undone. I just look like a slob. So I promise when we refresh the picture for the iTunes podcast, it's going to be much more, well, but just better. Just better. Let's just leave it that. All right, hope you enjoyed the show. Next week I'm in studio. We're still, I have a planned show for next week, but we might ditch it in lieu of Mary Beth Franklin. We will see. We're still working on that. So I hope everyone has a fantastic weekend. Happy Father's Day. Love you, Dad. And I know my son loves me, too. He just doesn't tell me. All right, see you later. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.